The title of this session is A Woman's Place is in the House and in the Senate. I have a t-shirt that says that on the front of it that I obtained from the Women's Political Caucus in Oregon. That's an arm of the National Women's Political Caucus, and I love it. I think it's a great saying because I think we need to focus on the fact that for some of us, our place is in another house in addition to the ones where we sleep and eat and those kinds of things, because I like to encourage women to be involved in politics in the elective arena as well as politics of every sort. I have run for political office myself. I have been a member of a community college board of directors, and I have run for state representative for our state House of Representatives, and intend to do so again, intend to run for elective office again. But I would like us to think of, I would like us to think of politics not only in that elective arena, but in lots of other different ways. I think if we're involved in leadership of our churches, we have to acknowledge that there's a whole lot of politics that goes on in the leadership of our churches, whether it's on question of women's ordination that gets real political, or just simply getting elected to a church board of directors, whatever it is that you call those church leadership positions. Politics is a real way of life for many of us whenever we're talking about our relationships with other people. Out of my own experience, I've come to the conclusion that politics for women is a very different matter than politics for men. And it has to do with some of the assumptions that we bring to what proper roles are for women and for men. And traditionally, politics has been the place for men, as well as other kinds of leadership positions. So, I don't really think I'm being too sensitive when I say that it's more difficult for a woman to get involved in politics, whether you're talking about church politics or politics in the elective office arena, than it is for a man. One of the experiences that taught this to me the hard way, I guess, is when I was running for state representative, I got this phone call one evening. I'm in the heat of the campaign. It was probably a month or less before the election date, and it was a primary election. And I got this phone call from a woman. There was a woman's voice on the other end, and she didn't identify who she was, but started out by telling me that she was really glad that I, as a middle-aged woman, was running for the State House of Representatives. And, you know, I'm at this point, I'm just so exhausted that I'm ready to hear all the good stuff I can, you know, and so I'm just lapping up some good things that she was saying. And then the punchline, literally, of what she was saying was, but if you can't control your own daughter, why should we vote for you? And this was just like a fist to the gut. You know, I have a hard time talking about it even now. The situation was that my daughter had run away, I don't know, sometime in that time, and was not living at our house, although we knew where she was and those sort of things. But it was a small community, and the community generally knew that my daughter was not living up to my highest expectations, to say the least. And after I recovered, after I picked myself up off the floor from that experience, it occurred to me to notice that I doubt if a phone call like that would ever have been made to a male candidate. I suspect that our expectations are such that we wouldn't, you know, we don't put that kind of a responsibility on a male candidate. A male candidate can, you know, his kids can be just as rotten as anybody else's kids, you know, but nobody assumes that that is that male's responsibility, and nobody thinks of that as some sort of relationship with his seeking political office. But at least some of us in our society apparently put that expectation on women. And so that's in one area that I think there are different expectations for women and men. Oh, I forgot to say when we started, jump in anytime. Don't wait for me to ask questions or to invite your questions. I'm doing that now. If you have comments or questions as we go along, please just jump in. I think one of the main problems of a woman involved in politics is not being taken seriously by, maybe by other women, but by other men generally. Sometimes not being taken seriously by your own family or people who are close to you. If you're an assertive kind of woman who has been involved in politics in the church or politics outside the elective position arena, then your family and the people that you know you tend to think of you as a doer. You know, you've got projects going all over the place, and that description I think may fit a lot of us. And sometimes there's the tendency to think about, oh, this is just another one of Mother's projects. You know, this is just one another one of her things that she's doing this season. She'll get over it. Sometimes it's a problem not being taken seriously by your constituents. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why I went to law school. I discovered after I went to law school that there were some other reasons for my being there. But I knew that I wanted to run for elective office. And somehow being to put my biographical statistics in the voter's pamphlet, you know, experience in the real world in general, a housewife, not terribly convincing for the electorate out there. And so, frankly, I went to law school. One of my primary reasons was to have something that gave me some validity, and so that I could say to the people in the community whom I wanted to vote for me, hey, I really have some credibility with you. I don't necessarily recommend that you go to law school if you're interested in getting into politics, but I don't think it hurts. I think the problem for any woman who is assertive enough to want to get involved in politics is how to be assertive enough to get what you want and to get in the position where you want to be without being seen by the community as too aggressive, the emasculating bitch kind of image. That's a fine line to tread. And maybe each of us have to answer it in our own way because we are each individuals, but I think there are probably some sort of do's and don'ts out there, some of which I've heard from other women who are in elective positions, but maybe some of it just has to be decided by yourself. Some of these things, interesting stories you hear from women in elective positions, things like a story that was told to me by a woman who is a state senator in Oregon. She said when she was first running for, let me see, I guess she first ran for state representative and was elected that before she became a state senator. Anyway, she is allergic to the kind of metal, whatever it was, in her wedding ring. And it turned her hand green or black or something. And anyway, so that whenever she would put her left hand up to her face, she would get black marks on her face, and was didn't think that, you know, when you're making a public appearance, that isn't always a good idea to have black marks on your face. So she thought, well, she just wouldn't wear her wedding ring. Her campaign staff said, no, wrong. If you are married, you always wear your wedding ring. We will help you. We will practice with you so you don't put your hand against your face, but you will wear your wedding ring because that's an important somehow kind of a qualification. Because in my opinion, generally, people who are single are thought to be, particularly women who are single, well, either they must be gay or there's something strange about them. If you're, I don't know, 30 maybe, and not married, there must be something about you that we need to mistrust, and so therefore we shouldn't elect you to public office. I don't know, it's kind of strange. But other things that I hadn't thought about before until being told by other women who are in elective positions, things like when you're campaigning, don't ever wear boots. because there is a general sense out there somewhere, at least in some segments of the population, that boots are only worn by prostitutes. So, so therefore, don't wear boots, you know. Kind of, you know, and you think about those, and I don't know, maybe the fact that somebody said them gives them some validity. I'm not sure that has any validity at all, but, you know, strange things like that. Oh, also, the other thing is no bright red nail polish. You know, you can wear something subdued pink, but nothing garish or things like that. All having to do with the way people are looking at you, and that's part of the problem of being involved in politics in the open arena, is just how much people are looking at you and being aware of every detail, not only of your appearance, but of your personal life as well. Some of the advantages, I think, of women being involved in running for elective office are the novelty of it. Women are still enough of a minority in most elective positions that you really can carry on somewhat the idea that politics is a dirty business and therefore male politicians are somehow a little less trusted than females, because females are the breath of fresh air. We are the novelty. We are the somehow cleaner because we haven't been involved in politics in the past. Whether that has any validity either, I'm not sure, but maybe it's important to be aware of it just because of the general perceptions of the population. And I think there are still those general perceptions that politics really is a dirty business carried on by people in smoke-filled rooms. Some of the problems in terms of your family that I've experienced are things like that would happen with women in any career field who is married or who has a family. The kind of tensions that are always there between family responsibilities and career responsibilities, and just because of the nature of politics or politics in the elective position area, the demands on your time are so much greater than most careers anyway, particularly when you're campaigning, that you really have to be ignoring your family a lot, or else have your family largely involved in your campaign. And I think it's probably no accident that a lot of people who are involved in politics are married to other people who are involved in politics, because you have that commonality and the other person really understands how demanding campaigning is and how much you are in the public light and is able to appreciate that. That's a pretty tough role for someone who is the appendant spouse to assume the supportive role, particularly if you're a woman, because most of our husbands or former husbands or males that we're involved in find it difficult to take that supporting role, at least publicly supporting, to be, the appendage somehow of the person who's in the limelight. That's a difficult role, and probably has led to breaking down of quite a few relationships because women wanted to get into politics in some level. There's also the tension about whether your children are involved. And pretty much I'm sure the children themselves make those decisions, but I have known women running for, particularly a woman running for a county commissioner position in the county I used to live in, that had young children who were out there with her husband. You know, it was the children and the husband who were out there handing out brochures at the doorsteps and greeting people on the street corners and those sorts of things. And it was very effective. I also know of a woman who is now running for Secretary of State in Oregon, but she used to be a state representative, who admitted that she very carefully planned a pregnancy so that she could be pregnant during a campaign, because that made her novelty in some way, and she was willing to use that to her political advantage. I'm sure it wasn't the only reason she got pregnant, but it had to do with the timing of the pregnancy, and I thought that was a little interesting, even to use something like a pregnancy for political gain. If your children aren't out there campaigning on the doorsteps with you, then there's always the problem about, again, the family time as opposed to the political time when you're out there campaigning. And it's a tough one in terms of your children also being put in the public limelight, because they're more aware. And that may have had something to do with my own daughter's difficulty with me at the time that I was campaigning, and it had to do with why she decided that that was the time to run away, was that she didn't like being put so much in the limelight and have people looking at her so closely. I admit, it's a tough role to put children in, but I'm not sure that's a reason to totally toss out the idea of being involved in politics. It's just another thing that you have to consider. One of the hardest parts for me about campaigning was asking other people for money. I was still involved in the patterning, you know, somehow my mother's voice is in the back of my head saying, nice girls don't do that, you know. The first hurdle to come over for me was the whole idea about telling people how good I was, because that was also part of my patterning about nice girls don't do that either. Back in grade school, you never voted for yourself when you were running for class president or something like that. You know, it was always the sports person-like thing to do, to vote for somebody else rather than to vote for yourself. And that somehow carries over. It's difficult to tell people, yes, I'm the best person for this particular job. That's one hurdle you have to cross. And then after you get over that one, the next one is asking people for money, saying, I'm good enough, and I will do a good enough job in this position that I deserve your money, that you should put money out for my campaign. And that's a difficult hurdle, and I think there have been some interesting results of the fact that women have a harder time doing that. Women also have a harder time getting money from big corporations or business executives or those kinds of things, because those folks are not as used to giving money to female candidates. Somehow female candidates haven't proved themselves as much and have a harder time getting money. But there was an interesting contrast of that in Oregon recently. We had a primary in May, and the two Democratic candidates for Secretary of State were a woman with a very well-known name in the state. A lot of people with her last name are involved in politics, and she was running against a man with not as well-known name, but who had obviously lots of money behind him. He was a Democrat, but he had access, he was a Democratic business person, and so he had access to a lot of the larger contributors in the business world. And the whole campaigns were a real contrast with this, the woman being more reliant on a lot of people being involved in her campaign, and the man having obviously a very well-financed campaign. She beat him, as a matter of fact. She is now the Democratic candidate that will go into the general election for the state Secretary of State position. The contrast for me was one of the difficulty of women being able to get money from the bigger financial contributors to campaigns, and that's traditionally a problem that women candidates have, just knowing how to ask for money from corporations or how to ask for money from big business, and how to convince them that you're worth giving it to. That's a real hurdle for a woman candidate to cross. One of the things that I have particularly appreciated about being a woman involved in running for elective office is the graciousness of the role models that have gone before me. There are some very high-powered women that I've become acquainted with, and they have been very open to, well, one of them, for example, is now the first woman justice of our state Supreme Court, and she had been involved, and she was a state representative before she got appointed to judicial positions. But you know, this is a real high-powered woman and with a lot of power and influence in the state. And still, she was just incredibly open to having lunch with me and letting me pick her brain about, you know, how you go about getting involved in politics. And that really said a lot to me, because she could easily have been too busy to talk to me, who was, you know, of little consequence, certainly in the political world. But that isn't the only example. There are a lot of women who have been involved in political office and who have achieved a good deal of power and influence, who are still very open to the fact that what women need is more women who are a few steps down the road from where they are, being willing to say, this is how I did it, and this is how you might take some steps in that direction if you're interested in doing that. That's really valuable, and what that says to me is that there is indeed an old boys network alive and well in the women's situation, too. I hate to call it the old boys network, because I would like to think that we will eventually evolve to a position where we don't have to rely on the old boys network. But for now, in order to get our foot in the door and in order to get into elective positions, we really need to rely on something similar to the old boys network, which is the people who have gone before helping up the new kid. One of the things that I would certainly recommend to people who are interested in getting involved in politics on whatever level is plan ahead, not just think about next year and what positions might be open either on your local school boards or your port commission or whatever kinds of elective bodies you have available for you to get involved in. But think about 5-10 years down the road, where you want to be, and not be afraid to have some pretty high ambitions for yourself. It may be hard to tell folks around you, yes, 10 years from now I want to be Justice of the Supreme Court, but it's all right to have that in your head anyway. You don't have to tell anybody about it if that's a difficult thing, but don't be afraid to dream big. Have some really high ideals for yourself, because that's the way the men have been doing it for years, and that's the way women need to get involved in that too. I'm still feeling like I'm doing all the talking. Yeah, questions, yes.
We came in late and I'm sorry, but I would like to know who you are and what your position is.
My name is Dee Begtel. I'm from Oregon. I live outside of Portland now, and I have run for state representative in our state, and I have also been a member of a community college board that was an elective kind of position. And I'm interested in running for office again, because I think politics is a very appropriate place for women to be, hence the title of the workshop that says, I think a woman's place is in the House of Representatives and in the Senate and on the Supreme Court and all kinds of other places. Did you have more questions that you'd like to ask?
How long did you go to law school?
I went to law school 3 years, and that was only 5 years ago. I graduated from law school in 1981, and I'm not sure if you missed my comment about why I went to law school. Okay. Again, I'm not sure that's necessarily I'm sure that's not necessarily the only route to get there, but I think women need to think seriously about some avenue to give yourself some credibility. And maybe one way of doing that is simply to run for the school board, if that's kind of and for most of us, I think it is, the lowest level of elective office that's available to us. The school board is a very appropriate place for women, just because women generally have children involved in the schools, or even if you don't, that's still a good place to start, because that's one way that you can kind of get your feet wet in terms of running and campaigning and all those sorts of things, and then use that to work your way up. I know of women who are now serving in the legislature of Oregon that have done that started in the same way, by running for the school board, and then you progress on up from there. Other questions, comments?
Do you use Well, one comment I have is that I agree with you about the school board. For some reason, the image that is evoked by a woman on the school board is totally not threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Because somehow, and I don't know why that is, but except maybe that thing about women filling in the school. But I really feel a difference between a woman who's on the school board and then, you know, the image evoked by a woman on the school board is nothing. It's just threatened men, which the other one might.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I have is, do you see yourself, like, if you get into any kind of elected position that takes the House of Representatives or the Senate, as in being a woman, that you have special things, womanly kinds of attitudes and experiences to give to that can't possibly be there, coming from a man with his attitudes or whatever, or is it just strictly as a politically interested and oriented person with certain skills to have?
I think I have something to offer that is different from what I see largely represent, a viewpoint that is generally not represented by males, but I don't want to be that exclusive that I say, yes, all women have something to offer, a different viewpoint that is different from the viewpoint of all men. I don't think it's nearly that polarized. I think there are a significant number of men, in my experience, who are involved in politics that have a real humane kind of point of view, that they are out there working for more daycare centers, and they are out there working for more people rights and more people issues, oriented issues. But I tend to characterize those kinds of issues as church issues, the more, you know, supportive of people, the kinds of things that we can do as a government that helps people, each person, rise to their own highest level, and or supports people who are not able to, you know, support themselves, for instance, welfare programs, those kinds of things. I don't think those are necessarily women's issues, but I think more women tend to be concerned about those than a lot of men politicians. I'm not sure I would go so far as to say that all women necessarily should be elected just because they are women, because I have seen some women candidates whose issues I really disagreed with violently, and there are women now serving in the Oregon House of Representatives that, or in the Oregon Legislature generally, that don't support the kinds of issues that I support at all. So I certainly wouldn't go so far as to say women ought to be elected just because they're women. Is that your question?
Yeah, I'm just curious about your reflections on that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I think for some of the same reasons that I mentioned before, that women generally do have a fresh insight. They are not as ingrained in the kind of power politics syndromes that many men, who have been in office for a long time, tend to have. And so women have kind of a new perspective to bring just because they are novices to the political system. And my opinion is generally that people should not be in, for instance, serving as a member of the House of Representatives for 20 years or 30 years or something like that. I can't imagine doing that personally. My personal pattern is more set by a person who was in a Lutheran church that I was worshiping with for a while in Seaside, Oregon, when I lived there, that he was a state representative for about 6 or 8 years. And during that time, he was involved in a discussion group within the church that had to do with the kind of personal compromise you have to make in order to be involved in politics and still be a Christian. And I'm sure from what he said in that discussion group that those choices really became excruciating ones for him. And so after having served a few years in the state legislature, he just had to get out to preserve his own sanity.
That's kind of the model that I would see myself following. I can't, I would worry about my own sense of ethics if I thought I could stay too long, if I could serve 20 years in the state House of Representatives, for example, or even in the state legislature generally, just because the personal compromises you make in the legislature are so difficult in terms of always weighing, well, do I support this issue because my own personal conscience tells me I should, or do I support the other side because that's what I need to support to get myself elected next time around. And my own personal sense of ethics could only stand that for so long, and then I would need to get out of that extremely tension-filled situation. And I would hope that any legislator that I thought, or most legislators that I thought I could trust, would be in that same position. I guess there are probably exceptions of that. I think Mark Hatfield, who is one of the national senators from Oregon, may be an exception of that because he has been in the U.S. Senate for a long time, but seems somehow to be able to live with making those excruciating personal ethical compromises and still survive. Yes?
Gee, I wondered what Oregon's viewpoint is on abortion. How does it stand now? I mean, is it legal in Oregon?
Yes, right. Abortion is legal in Oregon, but it's weird because the status of the Oregon law is such that it is contradictory to the national Roe v. Wade decision on abortion, but it's never been changed in Oregon, primarily, I guess, because the Oregon legislature has not had the guts to deal with the issue again. There have been enough other terrible issues they had to deal with. So generally, we're going by the Roe v. Wade decision, but it's never been, you know, and the state law has never been challenged or changed.
So Planned Parenthood is in effect in
yes.
Oregon?
Yes.
I'm concerned because I know Planned Parenthood in California has lost a lot of its federal funding.
Mm.
And that, to my knowledge, it's never happened before. I volunteered there for mm-hmm. a couple of years. And they're having starting to charge people who come in a lot more money. It used to be on a sliding scale, mm-hmm. and now there's a flat.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a flat fee for whatever it is you have. And I feel concerned about that. I have a different attitude about abortion than I did. And tend to be very rich, not rich, but I shifted a lot in the way I feel it. But it's got to be available for my young sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel about it. I'm feeling very frustrated.
Yeah.
About it right now.
Yeah, generally, a lot of the funding for abortions has been dropped in Oregon, too, but I believe the status of it is that a person on welfare can get one abortion free if she's under, it may be 17 or 18, something like that, then she can get more. You know, she can.
Let's hope she doesn't have.
Yes,
to.
Right. Let's hope she doesn't have to before the age of 18
yes.
or 17. But you know, there's some exception there for the age of the person that's requesting the abortion. But so limited abortions still are available. But it's a serious situation.
It's worse than me too because I know many. I just know people will refer that to around the. You know, around the corner, abortion
mm-hmm.
If it's taken away from women, I mean, there's the ability to legislate about their own bodies again. We're back in the dark ages, and it's such a concern.
Yeah, agree. You might be interested, as a matter of fact, before coming here, I was just meeting with Roger Harms. We're going to have a forum tonight on. Probably primarily dealing with the abortion question. We're going to be pretty gusty, so come if you'd like to talk about it.
Is it possible that generally speaking, I think of how men and women have been raised culturally in the last generation anyway, that men historically is true, that men being socialized to be more aggressive and assertive would be pay more attention to defense kinds of issues. And women as nurturers, as socialized, I hope that people will be socialized across the board from now on. But women as socialized as nurturers may be more sensitive to health care issues, daycare issues, human needs kinds of issues, more caretaking kinds of things. Do you think it tends to fall out that way, or does it not?
My impression is that it generally does. I have heard the blanket statement, for instance, on the national level, that if there were more women in the Congress, we wouldn't be spending these absolutely incredible amounts for the Defense Department. I have to believe that that's generally true, and maybe it is a stereotype, but somehow there is something having to do with nurturing children myself that informs my position on whether or not I ought to be able to send those children off to war. And I really think that's the basis of it. Somehow it's easier, I guess, for a male to say, yes, you know, I had to serve in the military, so therefore it's okay for my son to serve in the military too. And I'm not sure that it's that easy for a woman to say, just because, I don't know, maybe there is some basic chemistry that's different. I'm not sure. But generally, I tend to agree with what you just said, that it seems to me that men are more inclined to to vote for higher defense budgets, and women are more inclined to be more concerned with education and daycare centers and social welfare. That may be a bigoted point of view, but it may also be accurate.
Along that same line, what do you think about the styles of leadership? Do you think feminists bring a different style of leadership and a different way of looking at power and authority?
I hope so, but my concern is that it's really tough to buy into the traditional styles of leadership enough to get yourself elected and then not be so invested in those styles of leadership that you can say, now that I'm here in this position of authority, I will help change the system. And my fear
is it possible?
Yes, yes, I think so. And I'm not sure if it is possible. Because of some of my experience with, for example, the woman that I spoke of who's the state Supreme Court justice now, I guess I still cling to the hope that it is possible, but I know it becomes really tough for those women who get into those positions of authority then, partly because you're still working against a whole lot of male establishment, and maybe we'll have to get to the point where we're more than 50% of the state legislators or the national legislators are women before we can even talk about changing the system. But my fear is that when we get to that point, that those women will have so much invested in the system as it is then, that they won't be as willing to change it.
Because that's my hope in the church, that both women and men who are feminists can help encourage different forms of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been primarily male-dominated institution.
Yeah.
I hope it can happen outside.
Yeah, my experience in church leadership, and again, this isn't in the Lutheran context, but I suspect that my Presbyterian experience is fairly similar to yours in terms of the church session, that there are so many rules defining how the church session operates that it's very difficult to get in there and change the game plan in terms of how that session functions within itself. That's not saying that there may be a different style of leadership that a woman could bring to that. Perhaps a woman pastor could influence that maybe more than a woman on the session, but somehow to at least model for other people a different way of leading other people rather than the traditional just delegation of responsibility or running the whole show yourself kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a woman vice presidential nominee for the Democratic Party would help or hurt?
I think it would help. I think because, well, and this is probably a biased Democratic point of view, but I really think that there has been so much criticism about the gender gap with the Republicans that it would be a very strong way for the Democrats to pick up some votes.
Is there any statistical information available about how many women would vote separately from their husbands?
Not that I'm aware of. I have never seen any study that anyone's done on that issue.
I'm very curious about that. I have heard people say, unless we vote the same, it's ridiculous because we simply throw each other out.
Well,
I would be curious about to what extent that does occur.
I don't know. I think the business about canceling each other out is as ridiculous as my saying, well, my neighbor next door votes an extremely different position than I do, and so therefore there's no point in either of us voting because we cancel each other out. I mean, I think that's a ridiculous argument.
I agree, but I have heard that.
Yes.
But I just wonder how often it actually happens.
I don't know. I guess I, in my optimistic viewpoint, like to cling to the value of the secrecy of our voting booth, you know. And that's also another issue, interestingly enough, that's been raised in Oregon, where there are some people that are pushing for a lot of vote by mail things, and there are experiments being tried on some local districts level about voting by mail in various kinds of issues and people. And one of the arguments that's been proposed about that is that there would be too much influence on a woman, for example. You know, a woman with a domineering husband could say, you know, I'm going to stand here and watch you while you mark your ballot and send it in. I'm not sure how valid that is, but I guess it could be argued, and I certainly know of homes where that would indeed be possible to happen, and the woman would be so. That's right. Yes, the same kind of thing. You know, there, it does something. The argument is that it does something to the secrecy of the ballot box. Well, my watch says it's getting close to 5, and I would like to read to you something. This was a statement by Jill Ruckelshaus, who, in addition to being the wife of a politician, is also an excellent politician herself. She addressed the National Convention of the National Women's Political Caucus in 1977, and this statement of hers, a quote from her speech, has been printed on some stationery. It was on this stationery that a friend of mine sent me a note of encouragement, a note to get me through when I was campaigning. Jill Ruckelshaus says, "We are in for a very, very long haul." Oh, and incidentally, this statement was made about passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, but I think it applies to anything that women are doing in politics. "We are in for a very, very long haul. I am asking everything you have to give. We will never give up. You will lose your youth, your sleep, your arches, your strength, your patience, your sense of humor, and occasionally the understanding and support of the people that you love very much. In return, I have nothing to offer you but your pride in being a woman. All your dreams you've ever had for your daughters and nieces and granddaughters, your future, and the certain knowledge that at the end of your days, you will be able to look back and say that once in your life, you gave everything you had for justice." Wow. I cling to that hope. So, we can be dismissed if you like, or we can sit and chat for some more time if you'd like to do that too.
I have a funny story.
Oh, good. Tell a funny story.
It's my funny political story because Dee and I were neighbors for years and years. Neither of us live in the seaside anymore, but Dee was always a politician, you know, and I was a particular. But I was Democratic and my husband was Republican, and it's still the way it is. But anyway, when she was, I think it was in the governor's campaign years ago, and she coerced me into going door to door for support from the governor. And my rude awakening to how bad it really was knocking on an apartment door one day, and an older lady answered the door, and she explained to me very sympathetically how it would just be impossible for her to vote Democratic because her husband was Republican, and if she voted Democratic, she would cancel the vote out. And I was trying to somehow come back, you know, and how, you know, why is this necessary for you to do this type of thing? And she just said to me, young lady, you just go home and ask your husband.
Which is strongly reminiscent to the words of Paul that we've been dealing with in the Bible study, that the women should go home and ask their husbands if they have any questions in church. Yeah. You know, it's the same story.
You know, Dee, something I just want to point out about the power, the great value of the vote. I think we're all, I'm sorry, I don't want to speak for everyone. I know I'm sort of about this election, and yes, absolutely, I will vote, yeah. Mm-hmm. But if 48,000 more people had gotten out to vote, Bradley would have been governor of California. Yeah. It only took 48,000 mm-hmm. more people. Mm-hmm.
And I've also heard a similar thing that said it must have been the Kennedy-Nixon, no. Yeah, I think, okay. Anyway, it was so close that the margin of difference was one person per precinct in the nation.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an amazing thing. Yeah. That, if nothing else, is the reason why we should all go out and vote whether our husband is voting a different way or not. One person per precinct.
Yeah.
Oh, you take them in the voting booth.
Yeah, nobody's ever questioned it. They take turns punching the little things and take them. Because we all prepare the night before, we go through the ballot and uh-huh. they know the right answers.
Forget the name. Eric over killing. Right.
That's right. But they get much more interested that way.
Oh, sure. I assume your children are still young enough that they will accept your right answers, right? There comes a point when they're a little less willing to do that.
Oh.
Did you say there was a conversation, there was going to be something tonight on abortion?
Yes, there's a forum. There's a forum tonight at 9 o'clock.
Here.
And Roger Harms, who is a doctor, a physician, an OBGYN, and Granger Westber, who was just walking out the door, who is a pastor who has been involved in medical or in hospitals, and myself, will be talking about a case study. We were just before this trying to decide what case we want to use, but I think what we decided upon was a question that has to do with abortion, because we think it's important that people, well, I started out by saying people have their minds made up on that question already, but I have been swayed by the other males on the males on the panel to say maybe not. Maybe we all have an intellectual position, but that might be different if we were really confronted with a situation.
My position on abortion has shifted a lot in the last, since I worked at Planned Parenthood. When I went in there, I was absolutely for it. I still am, and yet I have a whole other position about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good. If you want to wrestle with that issue, please come.
Not much, but I will.